You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're opening up the mailbag, and we have questions about the luxury tax, roster building, what to expect from the kids next season. But I wanted to start by asking you a question, David. My own question to you. Tonight is Dwayne Wade's last game at American Airlines Arena. What do you want to see from D-Wade tonight?
You know, it's just, I would have liked for these games to have meant something. And although, even as we're recording this, you know, there's still a mathematical possibility. Detroit could lose out their remaining games, whereas Miami could win out. They need some additional things to happen, you know, specifically for the Charlotte Hornets to lose. So barring these games actually approaching any kind of significance as far as playoff standings are concerned, I just want them to have a good, solid game. I want the fans mostly to show up early, because obviously that's a concern. They're going to have the pregame ceremony that starts specifically at 7, not 7:01, not 6:59, as they've said, 7 o'clock. So despite the traffic concerns in downtown Miami, of which I am all too familiar, please try and get there. If you're from South Florida and you're going to the game, please try to get there as early as possible, somehow, some way, and show up and show love for, I think, arguably the greatest athlete in South Florida history. Like, I think, as much as...
That's not even close,
there
right?
are football fans... Any, yeah, oh, there are football fans that will say Dan Marino.
I know, you're right. I know. Yep, you're right. Dan Marino and all zero of his rings.
See, that's an unfair argument. I mean, that's not... It's not like he was responsible for not winning a championship.
He was the quarterback.
Oh, hey, there are...
We give Tom Brady all the... Players. We give him all the awards. We say, oh, this is the greatest football player of all time. Tom Brady, he's got all the rings. So if you get the rings, you also don't get the rings. Okay.
There's 20 other players.
I know. Like, they didn't build a defense. They didn't build a defense. He never had a good running game. I know. I'm very familiar with how bad the Miami Dolphins are. But at some point, and I know I'm not arguing with you, because you said you started this off, clearly he is the greatest athlete in South Florida sports history, and I think it is that clear. Like, at some point, when we're making that argument, the rings have to matter. The accomplishments have to matter. And Dwayne Wade has accomplished far more than Marino has ever accomplished. And it's not even close. Like, that's inarguable. Like, Marino basically accomplished nothing.
Well,
the whole point
he had a number
is to win a Super Bowl.
He had a number of records that were, you know, surpassed by Brett Favre or others over the course of...
Drew Brees broke the passing thing. I mean,
those were pretty impressive. Like let's, I'm not going to slag Marino just touchdowns. To hype up Dwayne Wade.
I am. No, I will. I'll go that route. Marino's overrated.
Oh, no, he's not.
He's always been overrated.
No,
yeah, he is.
You're kidding.
He's always been overrated. I've never been a fan of that team. I never, like, he didn't win anything.
Oh.
He was a lot of numbers. A whole lot of numbers.
You never doubted.
He was the Carmelo Anthony of the NFL. You never doubted
that there was a chance to come back if it was on Dan Marino's shoulders. Like, he could lead you into an opportunity to win a game. More often than not, it was on other players that would crumble. But come on, he had a number of game-saving drives over the course of his career. I mean, look, again, I think Dan Marino, like, I've stopped watching football. I don't care about what the Dolphins do, and I don't even really care all that much about what they did. But, I mean, he was a superb player and a hell of a passer. Like, yeah, his that speed.
Who's the Dolphins quarterback going to be this year? Oh, he had the fastest release ever. Like, we still talk about his release, which is a weird thing to talk about, but we still do. 48 touchdowns in a season was unbreakable until the NFL changed all their rules to make it breakable. I get it. I shouldn't slander Dan Marino that much. But Bob Greasy won more Super Bowls.
Oh, God.
And
oh, my God.
All right. So, I like where you're saying just get D Wade a solid game. Like, I don't need 60 shots from Dwayne.
Yeah,
Wade.
In fact, I really don't want that.
60 points on 50 shots.
This is mirrored.
And that's not Dwayne. We've heard that. You and I hear that all the time. Like, oh, do you think he'll have the Kobe thing at the end? Or, first of all, the One Last Dance farewell tour is corny, it's cliche, but it's not what Kobe
did.
It was not to the level of Kobe.
Like,
it was,
look, no. I feel like he said...
Until the very end here, when people started giving him gifts.
That's been going on all season. That's been going on all season, like, behind the scenes. Yeah, I don't think it's been...
Oh, yeah, behind the scenes.
Yeah, sure. I don't think it's been as publicly hyped up. Like, now, all of a sudden, everybody's kind of like... And look, again, he deserves it. He's a great player. But he started off, you know, years ago saying, no, he didn't want a Kobe farewell tour. And then even when he said this about this season, he didn't want a Kobe farewell tour. Guess what? He got the Kobe farewell tour. I mean, I wouldn't be all that
surprised.
Well,
no, because the Kobe thing was very much like bowing at the altar, where Dwayne Wade, it's more interactive. It was like, it's more of...
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
You know, like, and it just, so it doesn't come off the same way. I'm not saying it's not corny.
I feel like he's really relishing in the experiences, like the day-to-day aspects of what it means to be a player. Like, even signing autographs and doing things like that. I'm pretty sure Kobe did not do that in his last season or several seasons before that, because any interactions with fans would have been very, very toxic for Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wade's managed to change public perception around in a way that maybe the only thing that comes close is LeBron James from 2010 to LeBron James, you know, midway through 2012, after he won a title, after he won the Olympics, and then all of a sudden his Q rating started, you know, going through the roof again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's not corny, but it's not to the level of with the whole Kobe thing. Anyway, and Dwayne Wade's not going to do the Kobe thing in his last game, because what Kobe did in his last game was very much Kobe. Like, we knew that was going to happen, right? We didn't know he was going to score 60.
That he was going to put up that many
shots. We knew that he was going to take a... Yeah, we probably had, nobody predicted he could put up 50 shots in a game, which is just that's an accomplishment in itself, you know. But we knew that it was going to be something of that vein. And Dwayne Wade's just never been that player. That's not him. That's just not, he's not a gunner. That's just not the guy he is. And so I don't expect him to suddenly become that in his last home game, you know. It doesn't make sense. So I want to see specifically, and Dwayne Wade's had a knack of doing this lately. I want to see a come from behind steal, you know, as the other players run down the court. I love those. Just like when he just taps the ball out of their hands and runs back and lays it up, or does like that old man dunk thing that he's been doing a couple times this year. I want to see that. I want to see him. He won't stand on the table, right? No. Yeah, that's like almost disrespectful of the moments when he did stand on the table that deserved
maybe
it.
Maybe after the game, just to kind of, if they win.
Just to do it, yeah.
Soak it all in one last time in America Airlines Arena. Hear one last deafening roar there. I mean, look, from there, they'll go to Brooklyn, win or lose. They'll have exit interviews, and that's basically it. I mean, there's never going to be any more interaction with 17,000 fans at the America Airlines Arena. This is the last opportunity to do so.
A game-winning shot would be kind of cool.
It would be great.
Right? Like a buzzer beater? Yeah.
I feel like
I'm not ruling it
out. I feel like the Warriors was the the denouement of the season. Like that was the ultimate crescendo there. Like it built to that, and from there it's been kind of shaky. But as far as Dwayne Wade is concerned, like that was the best. Like to beat the Warriors, I don't think you're going to get a bigger crowd at American Airlines Arena, with the exception of potentially this Philadelphia game. You know, but to have the Warriors in town, who you know are a hot ticket item even at this point, and then to knock them off with a game winner at the buzzer, come on, that was so the best moment of the season.
You and I got to figure out something to do, I know, this summer, where we really kind of look back at Dwayne Wade's career and give it justice, because we're in the thick of the season right now, and you and I have a lot of things that
he's no Jerry West.
Non-heat related for the playoffs and stuff. Jesus Christ with the Jerry West stuff.
No, you're NBA history.
Who else is on the mount? I mean, we already compared him to the third best shooting guard ever, Kobe, right? So...
You know who doesn't get enough love from a shooting guard perspective? Clyde Drexler.
George Gervin. Clyde Drexler? Okay, so what is he, fifth,
he's up there. Reggie Miller probably should get some more love.
Never won anything. Mount Rushmore, South Florida sports, before we wrap up this question. Dwayne Wade, Dan Marino.
Don Shula.
Yeah, I guess if you want to put coaches up there. But what if we just did athletes?
Athletes. You see, I don't know that any other Dolphin, like, resonates with fans the way that Marino does.
Yeah, I think like Ricky Williams was like the closest thing.
No, his tenure there was too short. Like honestly, like too, I mean, you could have gone with Mark Payton and Mark Duper, you know, from the old receiving core.
Oh, true. Yeah, yeah.
Or Greasy, you know. Wow. You know, no.
Does Haslam get there? Does Haslam get on that Rushmore?
He should. And again, I mean, yeah. There's the winning aspect of it, and he was a contributor, obviously, early in his career. Yeah. But his impact there. I mean, you could probably make a case for LeBron James.
Oh, you definitely make a case for LeBron James. He's won, in 4 years, he won more championships than any other athlete in South Florida sports history outside of Dwayne Wade.
I mean, yeah. I don't know any other Marlins player that would stand out.
I just want to give the 97 Conine. And then the 2004. You have Jeff Conine. But like,
even that.
We're not putting Conine on Mount Rushmore.
Like, he was a fine player, and he had some big moments and everything like that. But, I mean, he didn't change the landscape of South Florida sports.
Mr. Marlin.
No UM player. You know, again, who do you need to go there? There's so many great quarterbacks throughout UM's history.
Yeah.
Hockey. Yeah. John Van Beesbrook and the Legend of the Rats. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's about it. You know, I mean, no other player really resonates that way either.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Mario Chalmers.
Well, he's got his own mountain that he carved himself. It's just bigger and kind of shadows over the Mount Rushmore, you know. Mount Chalmers is huge. Towers over
it's Mount Rio.
Knowing that it's Miami too, like we're talking about like in tens of feet too. Like any peaks in South Florida are pretty small, but yeah.
Marvin writes in, can you guys expand on the luxury tax a little more? The Heat are now locked into the luxury tax and might not even make the playoffs. Will the Heat be in a similar situation next year, assuming no trades are made? I understand paying the tax for Golden State, OKC, or any other star-studded team, but for a fringe playoff team that will only make the playoffs because the East teams are relatively weak, shouldn't we try to avoid the tax going
forward? Funny you should say that.
Marvin, sorry, I just want... This is a dated... We didn't get to a mailbag last week. Let's just start there. So this is a little bit of a dated question. This is a week before Rodney Magruder got cut. A week before the Heat lost four straight games and basically eliminated themselves from the playoffs. Again, not mathematically, but they're not going to the playoffs. So, all that said, Marvin's question still holds up because what is the point of paying the...
let's get to the first part of this question. Do you want to expand on what the luxury tax means a little bit more?
So, the luxury tax is basically a second level above the NBA salary cap that the NBA put into place in order to kind of dissuade those star-studded teams that Marvin was talking about, OKC, Golden State. It didn't work. The luxury tax didn't work, but that's kind of the idea behind it. So the luxury tax this year was $123 million, a little bit more than that, where the salary cap was $101 million. So it was, a $22 million buffer. So you could go over the cap to sign. You know, you've got bird rights. You can all do that thing. But as soon as you then hit that $123 million threshold, now you have to pay the luxury tax. And what the luxury tax involves, now you're paying anything over that luxury tax limit, you're paying double now, basically. And as you get into the repeater tax and you get higher and higher over the luxury tax, that kind of...
And the repeater tax is that on a year-to-year basis, if you're over the salary cap, you pay incrementally more taxes on that salary. So, yeah.
It just gets more and more expensive. So next year, the luxury tax is going up quite a bit. The projected luxury tax. I don't know if this has been confirmed yet, but the projected luxury tax is up to $132 million. So it's almost $10 million more, where the NBA salary cap is projected to only go up by a little bit less than $8 million. So that's not an exact ratio. So teams are getting a lot more space under the tax, and that's going to help Miami a lot because as of now, by waiving Rodney Magruder, they dodged the luxury tax, but before that, they were only about $1 million over it. Now they're under it. But next year, given the roster the way it is now, if you assume that they keep all the players, Whiteside picks up his player option, he comes back. Same thing with Dragic. If the Heat waive Ryan Anderson, as they're expected to do, take that $20 million salary off the books, and now you're only having to pay about $5.6 million in the guaranteed salary. So that would be that's a dead money hit against the cap. And then you include the tax holds for or the cap holds for Derek Jones Jr., Udonis Haslam, if he comes back, and then you get rid of Dwayne Wade's cap hold. So all of that, the Heat will have about $10 million of a buffer before they have to start worrying about the tax. They'll still be over the salary cap. They're going to be about $3 to $4 million over the salary cap. So they'll still have to operate in that way, but they're not going to have to operate as a tax-paying team next year. There's very little chance. Like, I don't see a way that they start operating as a tax team next year.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. So then I guess to the second part of this question, shouldn't we try to avoid the tax going forward? Well, that's already been answered. And as far as the qualification here, you know, that it's a fringe playoff team, should we try to avoid the tax going forward? I mean, I don't think anybody envisioned this team falling off the way they did. Like, now it's comfortable to say now that the team is probably going to miss the playoffs, that, you know, they were never going to be that good a team, etc. But we can point to at least by my reckoning, somewhere between 7 to 10 games that felt eminently winnable, that should have been won. And that if that was the case, we'd be talking about Miami potentially challenging for the fifth seed or somewhere close to that, you know?
Would that be worth, though, paying the luxury tax still? And that's an honest question. Like, if you're a playoff team, if you're above 500, if we're talking about, okay, let's just, you know, give the Heat the Brooklyn Nets record, right?
Hey, let's put them closer to the Pacers. You know, if they're challenging for the fifth seed and they can face the Celtics for a 7-game series, you don't like Miami's chances of potentially knocking off a much more talented yet somewhat dysfunctional Celtics team?
I mean, they could have knocked off the Celtics, but. So we're talking about like a 48-win team, which we thought would be what they were. That's what we predicted before the season. And so that's right where, like you said, the Pacers, that's kind of where they're at. They're at 47 wins at the time of us recording this. So is that worth the luxury tax? I don't know. Like, this is the second most expensive team in the league. It's not worth that.
There were some bad decisions as far as contracts are concerned. You can't ignore that.
But the Heat would not have, if the Heat were rolling like the Pacers were all season long, basically just consistently winning games, I don't think that they do the moves that they did. Maybe they trade Tyler Johnson. I don't know. It depends on how much Ellington Tyler is contributing to that team. But you keep Ellington. Yeah, you're probably not waving Rodney Magruder, you know, a week before the season's over. So some of the other things would have changed. And yeah, but ultimately this team is way too expensive. But we're not breaking any news there. All right, let's move on to our next question from Ferris, who writes in, if the kids get better, what's their ceiling for next season? I like the way that Ferris framed this, because you and I talked a lot about what their ceiling is in general. Like, what can Bam Adebayo look like 3, 4, 5 years from now, right? But what do we think that they'll look like next year? Because now's the time to start thinking about this stuff. Josh Richardson got better this year, plateaued a little bit, had some injuries, but overall, I think, like, overall plateaued in the second half of the year, but still over the course of the season, he got better than from last season. Bam Adebayo got a lot better than last season, mostly because he earned the starting job, got a lot more playing time, and he's looked more and more comfortable. We've talked about that 1,000 times. And then Justice Winslow had probably the biggest difference because he changed positions. He went from a wing player to point Justice, starts playing point guard, looks to be the point guard of the future for the Heat. And so that there's been that development. So we could start with any of these guys. You want to start with Justice and what he looks like after a lot of games of point guard under his belt since December, a full summer of working as a point guard? You imagine his regiment of during the offseason will change a little bit based on his new responsibilities. How do you think that impacts him going into next season as the starting point guard?
I'm trying to think what would be, as NBA players, you know, obviously there has to be a greater focus on what you develop. You know, you're trying to improve on everything, but there also has to be a singular aspect where you say, this is specifically something I need to work on. And I'm wondering what that might be for Justice, because I don't know that he's going to get any more explosive as an athlete. His shooting is already getting better, and I think it'll continue to do so. So I could imagine.
And the shooting is what he's always worked on, right? Every summer. He's been very open about, I've been working on the three-point shot. That becomes almost less of a thing. Or I expect him to do that less this summer because he'll have the ball in his hands next year more than just working on his catch-and-shoot stuff like he has for most of the beginning of his career.
I would say it's probably more of a focus on all ball-handling duties.
Yeah.
Passing.
Like running offense, running pick-and-roll, doing like a lot of pick-and-roll drills. I could see that.
Yeah. With again, a healthy dose of continuing to work on shooting. Because, I mean, I can't say for certain that there's a go-to move there where he feels comfortable. He does have a nice duck in and under. You know, he's good around the basket, although that can always get better too. So, I mean, again, there's a macro approach, and then the micro one is probably ball handling.
You know, Dwayne Wade has dunked more times than Justice has this season.
I mean, he is not a good leaper.
Yeah, he's not an above the rim player, and that's not going to change. Like you said, that doesn't change. I mean, it can change, but I don't think it will this next season.
you know, you have the inside track there as far as Victor Oladipo's trainer and being able to help him take the next level in his development and getting more explosive by strengthening the hips area and things of that sort. And that's not to say necessarily that's what afflicts or limits Justice, but maybe there is some kind of physiological aspect there where he could say, look, if I work on this, then I become more explosive as an athlete.
And I think that's something that they should work on. There's a lot of things that can go into that, but it's always lower body, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's jumping. So there is something there, I think, and it's something that he should probably look into and work on. There's a lot of places that he can go to work on that and a lot of trainers that he can work with that can help him with that. But I really think that he should – I don't know what Dwayne Wade's plans are, but if Dwayne Wade's willing to, you know, walk away from the game but – lend a helping hand to Justice and I don't
know.
No,
he can't.
Can I hope?
He can't. No, Wade has to step away. Like a player like that at 37, being able to still play at a high level, if he doesn't make a clean break, he'll re-sign with a team by the next year. I mean, and he doesn't want that.
I just
want
to see, you're right. I just want to see Justice be able to like snake the pick and roll the way Dwayne Wade can.
It would be lovely, but yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
so I think that's what he works on. I think that's what he looks like. I do think he'll work on that this summer because it's an obvious, and I think the coaches will probably tell him to work on that. It's too obvious. And finishing around the basket, whether it's finishing over the rim or finishing under the rim, but he needs to convert at the rim. He needs to develop that touch. That's the next part. Like, I'm almost like, three-point shooting at this point has always been the number one thing for Justice. It's a third or fourth thing for me at this point with him this summer. And then Bam. Bam is like, the more ball handling, the better we see from him on the court. I don't know what else there is for him to work on other than he might, you think just shooting, getting an outside shot.
I think there's been more willingness there. I think that that's going to be something that he's going to continue to work on and feel comfortable doing so. Cause I think that's the next step for him. Like if he can space the floor, even just a little bit, like he's so explosive. I don't see most centers in the league being able to stop him. If he's able to just, you know, create that kind of space there where you don't know what he's going to do next. I mean, he can get to the rim and finish on anybody. So I think that's his defense.
You respect him a little bit more from the outside, and that just gives him more space to use that freakish athleticism. Yeah. Like, almost in a way, like Pascal Siakam right now. Like, the big thing, the reason he's going to win Most Improved Player this year, a big part of that, there's a lot of reasons for that, but a big part of that is that he started converting from the corners a little bit more and being willing to take that three-point shot. He's still not a knockdown three-point shooter.
Solid enough.
But you just have to respect it. Yeah, you have to respect it. And so if Bam can develop that and respect it, all of a sudden he's able to use that handle that he already has, use that crazy athleticism to get to the basket. That would be huge for him. And that would also obviously involve him just being more aggressive, looking for his own shot and looking. I remember the end of that Minnesota game, not to rewind it back to these recent losses, but I thought he had a chance to maybe tie the game for the Heat in that game. He had that drive at the end, but then kicked it out to James Johnson instead. So you'd like to just see him go for it, you know? Just go for it.
I have a problem with that, though. I thought James Johnson would get the shot at the end, to be honest with you. And the pass was a little fast and he bobbled it a little bit, but I thought Johnson was going to be able to get it and potentially save the season.
What about Josh Richardson?
You know what? That's a little bit harder to quantify because I think his game is already, if not necessarily plateaued, again, there's a little bit of everything he can continue to work on, but I think he is probably Miami's quote-unquote best player in that aspect in that he is so well-rounded. There isn't any weakness in his game specifically. I think it's, with him, unfortunately, it's going to always be psychological. As a physical aspect, I would say he has to put on weight. Like, he's not going to be able to take the abuse. And I think there's something else there to him. Like, he's not perhaps the most wide-bodied athlete, and so there's also probably a little hesitation on his part to put on weight because some players, even today, feel like they get bulked up and that limits their flexibility and things of that sort. He needs to put on 10 pounds at least. That's it. Like he just can't take the abuse of 82 games without, you know, breaking apart at this point, you know, weighing what he does. So I mean, as strong as he might be, it's still a little too taxing, and I think he needs to put on a little bit more muscle. And again, maybe go through some kind of specific training regimen to prolong his health and flexibility over the course of a career and the season.
I mean, this is he eats French fries before every game. That's
does
the
he
point.
Still?
Like, I think he still does. I think Shandell Richardson wrote that for the Athletic. Yeah, it was this season. And that's cute, and it's like it's a ritual But it's time to grow up, and it's time to hit that next phase of your career. And we've seen this, we see this all the time. Like, players have, like, their cute little rituals. Then eventually, you know what? I can't eat French fries every freaking day. Like, I've got to take care of my body. And Josh breaks down every single season at the end of the year.
I'd like a big bowl of pasta for him. You know, something along those lines.
Yeah. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It works for everybody else. Just, you know, complex carbs. complex carbs and sugars to get you going for the game. That's all you need.
On the court, then, I would say, aside from the psychological aspect of it, I think Dwayne Wade's retirement is going to help a little bit, and I think you have to find a way to move Deion, because I think Josh has to become your go-to player in the clutch. Maybe Justice is still wired better for that sort of thing, but I still believe in Josh's ability to do it, and I just don't know that Josh believes in his ability to do it, and I think that's the biggest thing for him.
I think a part of that, too, and it's related to him bulking up. He needs to get to the line more. He can't settle for the mid-range shots like he has. He needs to put the shoulder down. He needs to get to the rim. And he needs to get more. Needs to get to the line more. And the reason he doesn't do that right now is because he probably would only be able to play 20 games. So he needs to put the muscle on, get to the rim. That's your homework, Josh. That's what you got to do. And lose the French fries. All right, wrapping up the mailbag, two more questions. This first one comes from PDOT, who writes in, will we as fans have to sit through another mediocre season of this crap?
Wow. Do you want me to start on this one?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. PDOT, you got to sit through another mediocre season of this crap, because you know what? It's not mediocre. It's not crap. It is what it is as far as the limitations of this team. I don't know what anybody's expectations are for this group or for the 29 other teams, not the Golden State Warriors. Like, what are you hoping for? Like, I keep seeing people talk about tanking, trading away players and assets and everything else like that. And what are the expectations here? If we had done this 2 years ago, instead of re-signing the current crop of players, would we have been willing to sit through a 20-win season after the 30 and 11 finish, you know, would we have been willing to go through a 5-7 game incremental improvement last year? Would we be willing to go to 30 something games now, knowing that maybe at the end of the tunnel, some players that you could have drafted over the last 3 years have more of an upside? Like, we just finished talking in the previous segment about three very good young players that have all of them potential to continue growing. On top of that, you've got other veterans that can offer a multitude of skills, and Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk, James Johnson, and others. It's not your money. What do you care? And all these players can contribute at a high level as long as they're playing and working hard, which I think, honestly, that was a big part of what was missing this season. How could you look at this year with the number of injuries and the kind of things that happened and the winning streaks along the way, the great growth from players specifically like Justice Winslow and Bam Adebayo and say, you know what, that was mediocre and or crap? Like, what are your expectations?
I mean, it would be nice to have Zion. He's really good. But no, I actually enjoyed this season a lot. This was a fun year. There was a lot of stuff happening this year.
It did. And maybe a lot of that was Dwayne Wade's farewell tour and everything else. But yeah. I mean, even through 82 games, it's like that gets a little tiresome. It's all about watching these guys play hard. Like, you can't see Josh trying as hard as he has and Justice spinning in the lane, making nifty passes and getting that kind of confidence that he didn't have over the first 3 years of his career. Seeing Bam block shots and dunk on guys and get rebounds in traffic and bring the ball up and all those sorts of things. I mean, you know, even Goran, as old as he is and as much as you want to give him crap about the kind of player he is and how limited he may or may not be, he had a nice run of games there after coming back from injury where we thought he was a superstar there. I mean, he looked great, and that was fun to watch.
Yeah, what he's been really bad like the last month, though.
We didn't talk about our stat of the game as far as that Raptors game, but that was going to be my stat of the game. Yeah, he has been, with the exception of two games where he scored over 20 points, he has barely broken double figures and has not shot over 500, so it's just really, really bad.
He's been bad. Look, I sympathize with PDOT here. To the extent that you just want to see something new, and that to me is the most, like,
I'm almost there.
And this season has been new. I mean, a new starting lineup, right? A new set of expectations and responsibilities for Justice, Josh, and Bam. Like, that part has been new. And then, you know, the Dwayne Wade farewell tour was new as a subject that we were talking about all year. But it's not, there's nothing right now. There needs to be something new for next season. Like, you just don't want to see them bring this group back and just hope for more internal development. And so I get that. And that, it's not entertaining. And to me, I just want to be entertained again next year. And hopefully the Heat make the playoffs. Hopefully they make enough improvements to make the playoffs. But this team is never winning a championship as currently assembled. So they've got another year, basically, to kind of reshuffle the decks. We know that.
Yeah.
That they're looking at 2020. So next year, they just need something new. That's it. Just something new that gives you a little bit of hope. And then maybe you're able to trade for an all-star or a superstar. Because that one singular talent is a lot of fun to watch. And we've gotten that in doses and,
yeah,
and quick flashes with Dwayne Wade this season. But he obviously isn't that the entire time. So just having that player just to watch and be in awe of, that's a lot of fun. And you just hope that they're able to find that next year.
You know,
that would be the best.
We forgot to mention Derrick Jones Jr. Is he considered part of the kids movement?
He should be, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, he's not really. He's kind of like the half brother of like the kids, you know.
He's the most raw of the three products.
Yes,
yeah. So I think
a lot of fun too.
There's room for growth there. So I mean, and that's exciting too. I mean, again, there's a young. I don't know if core is the right word, but there's a young group there that you can build around, and maybe I will say though, I'm getting closer to where you are as far as wanting something new. Like I am much more open to trading away the JJs or the Deons than I was earlier this season.
Mm.
So that's growth on my part.
That is growth on your part. Happy to hear that. Chris writes in, Deon is definitely not 100%, probably closer to 75%. What do we expect from him, assuming a healthy offseason, knock on wood? He's already regularly hitting the 15-point mark. Do you think he can get back to averaging 12 to 15 and just being more efficient and a more capable defender when he's closer to 100%? If he could be that guy, it would fit with the young guys. So let's start with that. He's not 100%.
Nope.
That's obvious. He's talked about that very openly. He's actually he's put a nice run of games together recently.
Mm.
Healthy off season. You've once said that Deon could be a 20-point per game scorer. Do you still think that?
I do. I really do. I mean, he's got the mentality. I don't know where the separation is. Like, I mean, he might have to tweak his offense in just such a way where he gets to the line more frequently. Look, the and one stuff, you know, we all love it. It's a fun little thing that Deon does. It probably grates on referees a lot more than we are aware of. You know, we can't see the referees reacting to it every time. But if he keeps calling it every time, and I want to say that he has not done it as much this season, maybe. Mostly because he missed a lot of time, but I think he's toned it down a little bit. But either way, like, he still has to be able to sell contact a little bit more. I don't know how. I mean, I think that's part of the Philly cheese mentality, where he takes contact and he absorbs it and he tries to finish above it or through it. And I think
if he loses weight this year, maybe he won't absorb it as much. So that might be part of it, right?
Maybe.
He said he needs to get down.
The reverse Josh Richardson then? He needs to lose weight.
Whatever Deon loses, Josh Richardson should find it. You know? Maybe that's just can they do that? Yeah, I think Deon could come back. I don't know. I don't think he'll be a 20 points per game guy. I just think there's a remarkable level of consistency there that Deon just doesn't have and never has had to hit that mark.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do actually think that a guy like Deon and a more efficient version of Deon, who is a little bit of a gunner still, you know, that fits well with this group. That still works. I just think that the Heat need a version of that that's not Deon Waiters. You need to upgrade that position again and find a little bit more of a low-usage guy who's better on defense consistently and doesn't come with the baggage that Deon has.
That's fair.
That's it. But the Heat might not have that luxury. They might have to just bring back Deon Waiters. And if that's the case, you hope that he gets into shape, gets back to 100% healthy, shows out at the start of the season, and maybe you hold on to him, or maybe you're able to flip him at the trade deadline.
That's the best case scenario, right? Like, you can't trade Deon as he currently plays, in the shape that he currently is. Like, he's going to have to shut down a little bit after the season. And then by May, June, maybe, he has to get back in there and show that he's already lost a significant amount of weight, that he's healthy, and that he wants to be able to assume that mantle and maybe take over in some of the scoring spots that Dwayne Wade did, you know?
That'll do it for our mailbag. The Heat play the Philadelphia 76ers tonight, Dwayne Wade's last home game, probably. We'll have a recap for you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening, and remember that you could subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in the car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. You can connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.